few minutes ago, we dropped H.R. 2, the Agriculture and Nutrition Act of 2018, in the hopper. And so we're now going forward. We'll mark this bill up next Wednesday, starting at 10 o'clock here in the Ag hearing room. And moving forward then to the floor, I anticipate that Chairman Robertson, the Ag Committee over the Senate, will do a similar bill, or we'll do a bill, and we'll go to the normal regular order of moving forward. H.R. 2, as you know, those single-digit numbers are maintained and controlled by the Speaker, and H.R. 1 was the big tax bill that we just finished, so H.R. 2 coming in shoulder-to-shoulder with that, it's significant of how important leadership believes in getting this this done. Make a few comments. The bill, setting the SNAP bill aside, all of the rest of the titles were negotiated in a bipartisan, the typical and standard bipartisanship you've come to expect out of the Ag Committee. Colin and I worked well together. His team had ideas that they wanted in. My team did as well. We worked together to put all those titles in place. And all of those compromises and agreements that we made are still in place, in spite of the fact that the Democrats said they're going to be unsupportive of the bill. We're going to leave everything in. We'll keep, honor my commitments on that that piece of the bill, which is simply the right thing to do. With respect to the SNAP side, I think there's still a lot of misinformation, either intentional or unintentional, in the arena. And now that the text of the bill is available, people will begin to see it for themselves and get a clearer understanding of what is actually going on, as opposed to maybe what was pitched over the last 3 or 4 weeks. So, nevertheless, we're moving forward. And if my Democrat colleagues would like to rejoin the effort, I look forward to having their constructive comments and work on the bill as we move. Every bill that at this stage is can be referred to as a work in progress. This one is exactly the same way. We'll have committee amendments next week that will be voted up or down or whatever, and then of course we'll go to the floor, and then when Senator Roberts gets his bill done, we'll move forward with the conference bill. But where we are right now, my immediate attention is getting it out of committee. Amendments are due next Monday night, and they'll move forward from there. The overall base premise on the SNAP side, 3 years ago, now into our fourth year, we started a soup-to-nuts review of SNAP, basically going to what it looked like with a blank piece of paper. What could we do to craft the right policy if you didn't have to worry about the cost, if you didn't have to worry about where the spending was or wasn't, what would it look like? And in 21 hearings, 3 years of work, bipartisan work, got us to what we thought was good policy, defendable policy that helps break that that cycle of poverty for folks who want to get out of it. It's primarily the changes affect the work-capable adult group from 18 to 59, and a requirement that if they want to participate in SNAP, and it's their choice. I mean, after they look at the requirements that we have for participating in SNAP, they choose for themselves that it's not worth it for them to participate. Then, you know, this is America. That's the kind of decision we all get to make on our own. But if they want a job, if they want a training, if they want to improve their lot in life, then we're going to provide resources to the state to help them make that happen. The overall plan would say if you're in that 18 to 59 group, you're not mentally, physically disabled, you're not caregiver of a six-year-old, then you're going to be required to participate in the program. You're going to be required to be working at least 20 hours a week or in some sort of a state-based training program. The resources that we're going to provide to each state would mandate that state set up for the unemployed in their or the underemployed in their state a case management program, an assessment program, supervised job search, apprenticeships, plugging into other existing workforce training programs. We don't create any new training programs per se, but we just create assets to make that happen. Each state has a population that's unique to that state and a job market that's unique to that state. We want to provide the flexibility that they can use then to tailor within the boundaries that we'll set a program that fits their pistol, so to speak, and allows them to address these long-term problems with resources. So there'll be a mandate, but it'll be a funded mandate for each and every person who meets that criterion. The overall SNAP criterion for what you have, what kind of circumstances you need to be in to qualify for SNAP, we made some what I would argue is upgrades there. We stick with 130% of poverty, but we apply that standard against every family in the country. There are certain states that have develop ways to get around that, and have gotten folks with 165% of poverty or 200% of poverty on the program when the base program was 130. So we're going to treat every family in America exactly the same way from the federal standpoint. With respect to the asset test, those asset levels were put in place in 1977. We inflate those numbers up to today's number, and we also put in place an inflation adjuster to avoid the problem we've had over the past. We also will exempt from the asset test the first $2,000 of a savings account that a struggling family could try to put together, that every family out there should have a safety net, so to speak, of their own, of a cash supply that something unexpected came up, they could keep their family going. And so it's just good personal family management to be able to have that. The car value that does not count against you moves up to $12,000. The first $12,000 value of a car does not count in your asset test. We want folks to have cars that are reliable enough to get them to and from work as a part of this process. So we make some adjustments there on that side. But we also treat every family in America exactly the same way with respect to the income test and these assets. Some program integrity things that we'll do, we'll create a national database of SNAP recipients so that we can do a couple of things. One, the main idea is to be able to analyze the program itself to understand where things are working, where they're not working. We can't answer in a fulsome way the kind of answers like how long does the average person stay on SNAP or how often do they get on, get back on, all those kind of things. We have a hard time trying to come to those grips, to those answers. It'll also help with perhaps if we've got people living in close to a state line where they sign up for SNAP in both in two different states, which we could not catch today, but we should be able to catch with this national database, so another program integrity issue there. So on the non-SNAP side, which is really keen to most folks in farm country, again, bipartisan work. We did well. Colin and I worked on all those things, each title, Title One. The dairy program, Title II, the conservation program, all of those we worked as a team, and good solid bipartisan work there. And so even though my Democrat colleagues may vote no coming out of committee, they will still benefit from having their provisions that they championed and for the producers that they sought to help with their provisions. Those will still be in the bill. They just won't have the kind of Democrat support that, that they might have otherwise had. There's several days between now and markup. I'm hopeful that during that time frame, committee members on both sides will get a better understanding of what we're doing, and I think the SNAP policy will stand on its own, and I think will be pretty compelling once folks understand exactly what we're doing and not doing. So.